All right, next question.
I guess kind of the follow-up on there is some people are asking, what about spiritual Israel that they hear often, like in churches?
Okay, again, you know what? Spiritual Israel is just as phony as the other stuff. There's no such thing, okay? Does not exist. Listen to the teaching I did called Discovering Your Identity, all right? In that, you'll figure out and understand that Israel is a physical body. You are physically a part of Israel. Spiritual Israel is the church's way of helping to deal with their inability to not want to replace Israel. So they have this idea that they know Scripture says it's all about Israel, and they don't want to physically do what's necessary to be Israel, so they're going to claim now that they are spiritual Israel because they can't get around that everything all the way through Revelation is about Israel. Okay? So they have to do a replacement theology to say that somehow they've now become, first they say that we've replaced Israel. That didn't really go well with some people. So now they said, okay, then we're just spiritual Israel. So we're still replacing them, but we're going to usurp the name a little bit. There are 12 gates into the New Jerusalem. And those 12 gates are still the 12 tribes. They're Israel. Now, Paul explains, as well as other places has explained, that you will then become Israel based on your choices, not on your birth. We see this with the book of Ruth. The whole reason the book of Ruth is in your Bible is so that you know that a Moabitess, who Deuteronomy 23:23 says no, or 23:3 says no, a Moabite cannot be into the 10th generation in the assembly. Not that she was in the assembly, but she's in the lineage of Messiah less than a few, just a few generations later, not 10. Because people say, well, Yeshua can't be because he's got a Moabitess in his lineage. No, he doesn't. He has a former Moabitess. He has an Israelite in his lineage because she changed citizenship. Your Elohim is my Elohim. Your people, my people. Your ways, my ways. That's a covenantal declaration right there. So if a Moabitess can be an Israelite, literally, that's what it's all about. Anybody can be an Israelite, literally. But they have to make that choice. Your Elohim is my Elohim, your ways my ways. In other words, you have to covenant. And that's why that's there.
Hey, Cindy Taylor, this from Danny. John 14, verse 2. Can you expound on this verse, particularly the quote-unquote stay in places and the if not so, I would have told you.
Okay, so John 14, you got to remember at this point, he's leading into being crucified. He's going to die. And so he says, let not your heart be troubled. Believe in Elohim. Also believe in me. And he says, look, let me explain how this all works. In my Father's house are many staying places, whatever that is. And if not, I would have told you so, and I go to prepare a place for you. And so he's saying, in my Father's house. Now, does any of us really believe he's talking about a physical house? That we're all going to live in some giant house that houses billions of people? Of course not. So he's using picture language as always. He said he spoke in parables always. So he's saying, look, in my Father's, where my Father is, in my Father's whatever, there's room for everybody. If not, I would have told you so. And I'm going to prepare that place for you in my Father's body, my Father's whatever you want word. He's using staying places here. Now, bear in mind, we know a few things. One, he says, I go to prepare a place for you. We also know that later in the same chapter, he's going to be sending through the Ruach himself back to teach and to instruct and to prepare them. The Spirit of Truth. So this is later in chapter 14 and verse 16 and 17 and 18, where he's going to say, I'm not going to leave you orphans, I'm coming to you. So from there, I'm going to prepare a place for you within the body, because that's the place we're supposed to stay. What does he say all throughout chapter 15? Stay in me, and I stay in you. And he does it again in 17. This whole idea of staying. I'm preparing a place for you to stay in. So where are we supposed to stay? He says, stay in me. So there's room in my father's house. So who is the body and who is the head of the body? This is the body of George, Fred, Michael, or Messiah? It's the body of Messiah, right? And in that body of Messiah, there's a room for you to stay in. Ooh, isn't that a little different? There's a place for you to stay in the body, his body. He says, stay in me, and I stay in you. We could also take this into Revelation, where we understand there will be the new Jerusalem coming down from heaven. It's coming down to the earth. There'll be a new heaven, a new earth, and a new Jerusalem coming down from heaven to earth, to the earth, to, and there will be where we will all dwell forever. And there's room for you there, too.
M2R Vanna from someone in their congregation says, are we permitted to buy and sell on new moons? Amos 8:5 seems to imply that they weren't allowed.
Okay. Now, let's try to remember to take things into context here. Amos 8 and verse 5 says, saying, well, I'll go to verse 4. Hear this, you who are swallowing up the needy to do away with the poor of the land, saying, when does the new moon pass so that we sell grain and the Sabbath so that we trade our wheat to make the ephah small and the shekel large and to falsify the scales by deceit? Okay? So, we know that it's talking about a new moon and we know that it's talking about a Sabbath. And usually when it says something and something, it's kind of connecting them together that they're the same. However, this is the only place that you see this kind of a reference. So the more logical thing is to say, maybe it's talking about the new moon that is a Sabbath. Maybe this is a Rosh Hashanah reference, which would also be connected to, guess what? The buying and selling and everything that happens when we start the new Shemitah cycle and the Yovel cycle. In other words, this is about oppressing the needy and the poor. And people are wondering when we can get into the next cycle. Because remember, the Yovel in Leviticus 25 is counted from the seventh month, and it's declared after atonement. So now, very reasonably, you could be saying that they're talking here specifically about the Feast of Trumpets, Tishrei 1, the new moon, and the Sabbath. It's both. Okay? So hopefully that makes sense. There is no other reference to how to keep. There actually is no reference anywhere to how to keep the new moons, except that we're told to celebrate them. Okay? Look, Yahweh has never had a problem being specific in his detail when he expects us to do or not do something. If the new moons were to be treated the way this could be interpreted as new moon, you can't buy or sell, it would have been listed in Leviticus 23. Because everything Leviticus 23 is listing those days when you cannot buy or sell. They're all listed there. New moon isn't listed there. The only one listed there is which one? The seventh month new moon. Because that's a holy day feast. So if I was making an educated guess about something that really is not much details about, well then this, okay. And by the way, this is being given. This is what the master showed me and see a basket of summer fruit, verse 1. So he's having a vision and trying to understand how that vision plays into things. I think it's tying into Jubilees, Shemitahs, and Feast of Trumpets.
Okay, from Von Billow, I had a question regarding Parsha Bo. When the death angel came, what happened to the firstborn of Egyptians who turned to Yah, but their parents didn't?
Okay, read that one. Read this. What happened to, start there and say the part.
What happened to the firstborn of Egyptians who turned to Yah, but their parents didn't?
Okay, first of all, there's no death angel. So stop that. It says Yahweh went through and killed everybody. It's just, that's what it says. Now, did he use one of his representatives to do it in some way? Sure. We like to think of it as the death angel. It says, no, Yahweh went through. It says, Yahweh will pass over you. Yahweh's coming through the camp, so to speak. So let's not use those terms. I know that hurts to think that way, but no, it says that he was doing it. Now, it doesn't mean he literally did it himself, because someone who represents him is like he did it. Okay, when it says Elohim led them through the wilderness, well, no, Moses did, but Moses represented him. So it might as well be that Elohim did it. It's the same thing. Okay, but this idea that it's the angel of death, that's more Cecil B. DeMille than anything else. Okay? As far as what happened to the firstborn, look, nobody at this point from the mixed multitude or from the Israelites, nobody was safe unless they put the blood on their doorpost, period. So they died. So, and at this point, you don't know what the status is of a mixed multitude is thinking, you know what? I think maybe we ought to get out of Dodge. That doesn't mean they were believing in Yahweh. The Israelites weren't believing in Yahweh. They were still not trusting him and whining and panicking and feed me, I'm thirsty, I'm hungry, and whatever, okay? So, yeah, anybody that didn't have blood on their doorpost was dead if they were firstborn, period. Okay? Because remember, believing in Yahweh had nothing to do with not dying. It had to do with, did you put blood on the doorpost? Which was a believing to some degree. What I'm saying is their relationship or their starting to come out of this idea of paganism and thinking I get who Yahweh is did not save anybody. They had to do the mechanics. By the way, let that be a lesson to all of you believers who think that you have to believe and not do anything. Believing as an Israelite in Egypt saved them zero if they didn't do the mechanical instruction to put blood on the doorposts. Okay? And we have no evidence of this, but I'm going to speak out of turn here a little bit. If they didn't select the lamb like they were supposed to and keep it for the days they were supposed to and then slaughter it like they were supposed to and put that blood on their doorpost, they probably weren't delivered either. If they just randomly just took some blood and put it on their doorpost. I'm just saying, it doesn't say that anywhere. It wouldn't surprise me. He told them exactly what to do, and unless they did exactly what he said, they weren't going to get what he said they would get, which was the protection. So somebody that just was stubbornly not wanting to listen, and then that, like the last minute just went quickly, killed something, took blood and put it on his door, they were probably not safe. He expects us to understand that details matter, and if he tells you to do something, he wants it done exactly the way he says. When he gives the recipes for the offerings, they're very detailed. A half a hin of this, a half an ephah of that, and this one of this. It's very specific. And he doesn't expect you to put more or less. He wants you to do it exactly like he says. Listen to the teaching, follow the pattern exactly. All right, it's Exodus 25:9. He says, and they gave him the pattern was shown on the mountain, and they had to follow that pattern exactly.
Okay, Anna Kaufman says, how do you determine when we are to wait for Yah versus if Yah is waiting for us for certain things in our life?
Counsel. I don't know what else to say. Counsel. It really depends on what the thing is. So seek counsel. Look, if we're going to believe... Okay, this is an if, okay? Remember, there's an if in the front of this. If you're going to believe what Yahweh says and how he does things, everything else, then you also must believe that there are Ephesians 4 people out there that are anointed and appointed, that he will inspire with the right understandings and counsel when you need it. And by the way, I never said that that means I'm one. I simply said you have to believe they exist, that it would behoove you to find one. Okay, so when you have a situation where you don't know if he's waiting on you or you're waiting on him or what should be the thing, you probably should talk to somebody that can get inspired responses for you from above, who can ask you, what is it that you're hesitant to do or you're waiting on or what do you think? And then I may be given the insight, if it's me, to tell you he's waiting for you to do this or you need to just wait for him. But it's really going to depend on what it is and those details, okay?
Okay, I got a couple here regarding the second tithe. Ken Thomas just wants to know if he can use the second tithe for a passport to come to the feast. And Jess E. says, can a second tithe be used to fix up a vehicle so they can drive to the feast?
Okay, so interesting question. First of all, the tithe, the second tithe, which in got to see where it's at Deuteronomy 14, I believe, right? So the second tithe, it says, can be used for whatever your heart desires. Of course, it tells you that you'd be doing this once you already arrive. The thing is this. let's first make sure that you're using it for what it needs to be used for, which is so that you can go and attend and do the feast. Now, if you're saying, well, I can't get there, okay, then being able, having to fix a vehicle so it can make it there would be something you need to do. So then, yes, I would say that you could use your second tithe to do that. Otherwise, you couldn't attend. I'm sure the guys would use that to fix their wagons or their carts or whatever it is they were going to take all their things to do with. But don't tell me when you get here you can't afford the meals and everything because you spent it on the car. Okay? You have to find a way to balance those things out. Otherwise, you're just using it because you want to fix your car. Okay? And then you say you can't come because you didn't have enough money for the rest of it. Okay, that money is first and foremost for the rest of it. So hopefully that makes sense. So the question was about fixing the vehicle. The other one was, oh, passport. I don't know how to just, and this is not just the person who's asking the question, it's all of you. When are you going to stop the baby, petty, ridiculous things? How much is a passport anyway? You can't, it's like people telling me they can't afford nicer clothes. Really? You can't save up and buy a nicer pair of clothes, a set of clothing every now and then. What are you doing with your money? Because you're going to tell me you can't afford to buy a passport out of your own money, then don't tell me you have a cell phone and cable TV and you go to Starbucks three times a week and everything else. That's ridiculous. That money, it's not like, okay, so the car, maybe it needs $1,000 worth of repairs. That's different. Maybe you don't have that in your budget. So then you fix the car because you have tithe money for that. But we're going to start getting really like, well, to pay for the passport. I think it's a legitimate thing, I guess, if you're using it for the feast, if that's the main reason you're getting it. But I'm trying to just get the point across of, really, you need tithe money to pay for a less than $100 thing or whatever it is? We've got some financial issues that really need to be addressed. Okay? He wants you to enjoy it. So if you need a passport, yes, the answer is yes, you could use that. I'm just trying to make a point that's sideways from that. You're supposed to be coming with the second tithe to live in an abundant way and enjoy and celebrate the feast in an abundant way. That's why you're putting this tithe money aside. Of course, you're not going to have enough tithe to have an abundant way if you haven't done enough work to have the tithe in the first place. And I'm telling you, you guys don't aim high enough. And right now, you're crazy if you're not making the effort, because there's unbelievable opportunity to go into any position on any level right now, because nobody wants to work. You could start anywhere and move up quickly in almost anything if you want to and put in the effort, because the openings are everywhere. Everywhere. I don't care what profession you think it is. And so you need to aim higher, so that you can have the life he wants you to have. Do you notice that almost everybody of any significance in Scripture is wealthy? I don't think they're wealthy just because Yah gave it to them. They worked their you-know-whats off. They worked hard and diligently and managed their finances and their work ethic and everything else, which is why they were wealthy. I just want you to stop looking for other ways to do this. Okay, call for counsel. Let me help you with, or Billy help you with your budgeting to see where this money's at. I can't argue the idea that second tithe for a passport to fly here is not appropriate. It is, that's fine. I'm just wondering why you would need your second tithe to do something like that. The only reason I can think of is either A, you don't have the rest of the money anywhere else to do it, or B, you don't want to spend your own money to do it. Here's the funny thing. I'd much rather see you spend your money on the plane ticket. I'd rather see you spend your money on going to a nice restaurant during the event to celebrate and enjoy than on these other mundane things like fixing your car and buying your passport. But if that's the only way you can do it, do it. All right? Was that fair? I tried to be nice. But I think that, you know. And Billy isn't any more gentle, trust me, when it comes to trying to inspire people to aim higher. I'm going to say this again, but I'm going to clarify it a little better this time, because you guys hear, but you don't hear, or you don't listen. You hear it, but you don't listen. I think it's appropriate to have a target goal of you doing what's necessary to have a value per hour of your age. I didn't say that your employer should pay you your hourly wage based on your age. I said you should be able to create enough value to be able to earn per hour your age. Then you would have an appropriate income for your age. A 25-year-old getting married, wanting to start a family, making $50,000 a year, perfectly fine. A 40-year-old making $80,000, perfectly fine. You understand what I'm saying? Because whatever per hour is, you double it, that's your annual. Okay? Give or take a few thousand, a few hundred bucks, whatever. Okay? Aim for how do you get there. If you know someday you're 25 and someday you're going to be 40 and now you're making, say, $20 an hour, close, $25, whatever it is you're making, you may never get higher than that if you don't aim and figure out how to get to something that pays 40. Then you get to be 40 years old. You're wondering why you're still making $20 an hour. And now you got three kids, a wife, and everything else, and you can't make it work. And you're still living in an apartment. You can't buy a house. You can't do you haven't bought a new car ever. You can just keep fixing the beat up one. I don't mean, when I say new, I don't mean necessarily brand new, like a newer, you know, car that doesn't need all the help. You keep buying beat up fixer uppers. Figure out how to get, if you set a goal, I want to make this, then you have to figure out a path from where you are to there. We can help, Billy can help, we do these things. But your financial struggles is because you have not, I don't want to call you lazy, but you're lazy. I don't mean lazy like you don't work hard. Some of you work very hard at things that don't pay very well. But you're too lazy to make the effort to do the thing that's difficult, which is change your path to something that actually pays better. Because you're comfortable doing the thing you work very hard at that you don't get paid very much for. So you whine and complain about your pay, but that's not the owner's fault. Job pays what it pays. If I've got a position in my company that pays $20 an hour, I don't care if you've been with me for 20 years, I'm not paying you $40 an hour ever for that job. If you don't like it, I'll get someone else to get $20 an hour and do that job. I'm speaking as a corporate owner, not necessarily from the ministry. I'm saying if I'm a business owner, because the job pays $20 an hour, and I can get people every day who'll take that. You need to get a job that pays $40 an hour, if that's what you need, because that's what it pays. Don't think someday they're going to pay you $40 to do the $20 job. Not going to happen. And don't tell me you can't figure out something in life that pays better. You can. You're too lazy to believe that you can do better. That's a lazy thinking. Most of the laziness is in your head. You don't want to think and then commit and make the effort. Same reason why people don't go to the gym and work out or they don't do certain things, because it's effort we don't want to make. That's the laziness. And all of us that are lazy in certain areas are very, very hard workers in other areas. So I'm not saying that we do not work hard. The people out there that are killing it at $15 an hour at minimum wage, they're working really hard. They are working really hard. It's not a great place to stay, though. Those jobs are for entry level and people that just want a little part-time income as part of their retirement or something. It's not for productive age people. I walk into a McDonald's or something, well, I don't, but if I did, I walked into a fast food place, I'm always sad to see the 35 to 45-year-old working there. Why are you there? Unless you're owning the place or running it and getting paid the manager, why are you behind the counter saying, do you want fries with that? Making 15 an hour or whatever, 12 an hour. Why are you doing that? Why are you not aiming any higher? You can't be making enough for anything at that point. A single teenager who's now 18, 19, 20 years old can maybe with a roommate get an apartment and work a minimum wage or a McDonald's type job. But then they have to also then pay for a car payment and insurance and everything. I don't know how any of that's done. So I applaud your creativity for those of you that are doing it and making it work. But you have to aim higher. And some of you think, why are you talking about it on the Sabbath? Because it's hurting every part of your walk, the distraction of your life in your financial area. Okay? It is killing every bit of your other stuff because your attitude is going to be bad. Your emotions are going to be shot. You're going to be drained and frustrated and depressed because of your finances more than anything else. So why not just fix it? Well, I don't know how to fix it. So what do you do when you don't know how to do something? You find someone who does and ask them how to do it. Isn't that how you do anything? You know, the first time I ever changed my own oil, I didn't know how to do it. I asked someone to show me how to do it. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I could figure out how to get under and figure out where the oil pan was, I guess, and open it up and drain that. I had no idea where this thing was way up in, you know, where the filter was. Or that I needed a special tool to get in there and pull that out, you know, to get around it. You got to ask somebody who knows how to do what you need to do. And there's not a lack of people out there with books, videos, and courses and everything else to teach you how to do better. Just realize most of it is scammy, so be careful which ones you get. Try to get the ones that are free. There's a ton of it out there for free. You don't need to spend a bunch of money to do all this stuff. But you should know the path you're on, where it's going, whether it's spiritually, physically, financially, whatever. You should know where it's going. You should not be surprised when you get into some negative, horrible health condition because you've been eating foolishly your whole life, or smoking your whole life, or doing drugs your whole life, or drinking yourself and ruining your liver. Whatever you're doing should never surprise you because what you're doing leads somewhere. Same thing with your Torah walk. If you're doing it, you should know where it leads. If you're not doing it, you should know where that leads. Then you're going to sit there and act like, Lord, Lord, we did all this stuff in your name. We had no idea. Nonsense. Okay? You did it your way instead of his, and that's why it didn't work. Okay? All right. I just want to encourage you. You can do this. You just got to find the desire, the will, the strength to do it. You know, the people that have so much, if you listen to them, they're all over every social media where they're doing these motivational things. They are, in a right way, obsessed with where they're trying to go. You're not going to get in the kingdom unless you're obsessed with it. It takes an obsession to focus on every aspect of your life, trying to line it up with him. You have to have that kind of focus. Every aspect of your life, anybody out there that you see that went from nothing to all this wealth and all this success, and I don't care if it's in athletics, in music, in business, whatever, they were absolutely obsessed. They didn't sit around watching TV. They didn't sit around doing video games. They spent their whole focus on getting from where they were to where they wanted to be. And what do? We work hard, we come home tired, we eat some food, and we sit in front of the TV. Or YouTube or social media or something. You know, these guys, listen to Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's great when it comes to this. When he came to this country, he worked a construction job, took acting classes at night, and went to the gym for several hours to do his bodybuilding every day. He knew what he wanted. He wanted to be the best bodybuilder in the world, and he was. He wanted to be an acting star, and he was. And he wanted to pay his bills in the meantime, so he did. You know, he says, as a joke, he says, look, there's 24 hours in a day. He says, so you sleep for 6 hours, it leaves you 18. He says, some of you think that you need 8 hours. He says, so sleep faster. But what are you doing with the 16 hours, assuming you sleep 8? What do you do with that 16 hours? Well, you work for 8. Okay, so what do you do with the other 8? You got more time than you think. You waste most of it. Where's your time for Yah? Where's your studying time? Where's any of that time? What are you doing? We waste so much time. You got to manage your time more than you have to manage anything else. All right, that was just personal development 101. I don't know. And all of this because someone wanted to know if they could use their second tithe to buy a passport. Okay. Which the answer was yes, by the way. So go ahead, what's next?
Hey, Jeff and Tony Lumen, it says, what's the difference between the six candle and the eight candle menorahs is prepping for next year?
Okay. First of all, you're off by one. Okay, there's 7 and 9, but that's okay. All right, so the menorah, which is what you find in the temple, had 7 branches. Okay? The Hanukkah, okay, has 9. And there's the difference. Okay, the Hanukkah is for celebrating the Hanukkah, commemorating the Hanukkah event. And so you have 8 days of Hanukkah with the Shamash candle or the serving candle being the 9th one. The 7th branch is the symbol that you see in Scripture for Israel. The 7th branch is what they had in the temple. And so that's the difference, okay? So one is a menorah, as you would understand it from the temple. The other is a Hanukkah. Okay, it's what you use for Hanukkah.
Okay, from Jose Willier, they're from Canada. Says, if we are not to work on Shabbat, are we allowed to work until the setting of the sun on Friday and continue working on the setting of the sun on Shabbat evening in our time zone?
All right, so I know it gets tougher, too, the further you go extremely south or north, and the sundowns get to be really sort of very long or very short as far as the dark time and the light time. But look, you can work until sundown, and then you get in your car and drive home, and that's fine. I would leave it a little bit more cushioned than that. I wouldn't want to take it right to the edge because you need some time to detox your head to get yourself ready for Shabbat, too. So I'd want to leave that a little bit more cushioned than that. But my policy has always been, when I say policy, I mean for myself. I don't impose any of that on you guys, that I like to start Shabbat a little early and end Shabbat a little late so that I have that protected with a little bit of a cushion. Okay? So when my phone tells me sundown is 6 o'clock, I'll look outside and the sun has probably gone below the horizon, but it's still light outside. That's not the sundown they're talking about biblically yet. It actually gets dark for sundown. But I'll go with my phone sundown, which is probably a good 15 minutes before it's actually dark, and I will start Shabbat and stop doing anything else at that point. Now, I'm not going to end Shabbat based on my phone because it's the light out. I'm going to wait till it's dark. That may be another 15, 20 minutes. Why wouldn't you want more Shabbat, not less? We're looking forward to 1,000 years of Shabbat or forever of Shabbat, right? So if you have work to do, if sundown is 5 o'clock and that's when you're, and your job only goes till 5 o'clock, I would still want to be done at 4:30. I would want to have some time to get in my car, go home, get myself in my right mindset for Shabbat. Okay? When as far as sundown and you have to go back to work, we have people that work second, third shifts, that kind of thing, who work right after Sabbath is over. Well, then again, you will start after it's dark. Okay? Don't start until after it's dark, which is usually, like I said, a good 15 to 30 minutes, depending on where you are. If you're in the mountains, the sun can really get darker quicker because of how it sets and the mountains block things. But you just have to wait until it's after the official sundown, which means it went below the horizon, and then it actually gets dark. Okay? There's a tradition in Judaism to look for to see if you can see 2 stars. Okay? A couple of stars. Well, maybe you can, maybe you can't. If it's overcast, you're not going to see anything. See a couple of stars, okay? But look for it to be dark. If you know what dark is, take whatever the official sundown is and add 15, 20 minutes to it. You'll be all right, okay? All right, because if it's looking for when the sun actually goes below the horizon, it's still got lots of light that's still coming over. It's physically, you can't see it there anymore, but it's still giving tons of light. It takes a little while for it to be far enough below the horizon that you actually get dark.
Okay, from Adam, says, what constitutes a marriage in Yahweh's eyes? It says, my wife and I believe we are married in the eyes of Yahweh, and we do not hide from anyone we encounter that we are husband and wife.
We have to be careful we don't play these games. And we have a lot of people out there that are not doing this right. Nobody, including Yahweh, cares what you think you've done. So in your eyes, it makes no difference. Now, you're going to say, well, I think it's right in Yahweh's eyes. Well, why do you think that? Well, because my wife and I made commitments. What's the purpose of a marriage? Okay? As far as the idea of calling it a marriage, it's a legal entity within the idea of Israel. Okay, and countries and governments. But in Israel, in Scripture, it's a legal relationship. And in that legal relationship, there's certain obligations, but that legal relationship has to be known publicly. There is no Scripture about what must be done in terms of a ceremony. My best guess is that the minimum requirement is that it be done in terms of this legal entity should be done or created in a public setting with witnesses so the public will know you two are now married and off limits to other people, because that's what that legal entity is. You are now each other's and nobody else's. And that there should be a vow or covenant made in front of those witnesses to that effect. And I've done a wedding ceremony where all there was a vows made in front of witnesses. Ceremony took 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I thought it was in some ways a little, you know, odd to do it that way, but I couldn't argue with the legitimacy of it. There was plenty of witnesses there, and there was two people who made commitments. Now, whether you file that with the government or not is not relevant as far as it being a marriage. But you needed to have done it in a community setting in front of witnesses. It doesn't have to be everybody in the community, but in some sort of a community where the witnesses can tell that community that you indeed are married. So if we had members of this congregation get married and they only wanted to have a small ceremony with maybe just the immediate family, maybe 10 people are there, the thing is they would still be doing it in a setting where then the witnesses could tell everybody else in this community, these two are now married. They need to be looked at and treated and understood as being married. So if you've committed to each other and didn't do it this way, I don't think you're married. You can't just, in your own house, get together, have a little private thing, the two of you, where you commit to each other. Because marriage is a community understood status that puts you in a place where if you do something with somebody not your spouse, you are committing adultery. If you're not married, or people don't know you're married, then that's not the case. And it needs to be known that you are. Look at even in Egypt, when Pharaoh looks at Abraham and said, why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Even Pharaoh understood that point. Why did you hide that fact? So there needs to be some way of knowing and clearly defined and committed to that you are husband and wife. And so we do a wedding. We call it a wedding ceremony or wedding for that. Now, what we do at the ceremony? Very flexible, lots of traditions. Do anything you want, do nothing you want. Make vows in public in front of witnesses is all I need. Okay? I think that misses the enjoyment of the celebration if that's all you do. But that's really all I can see is required. Now, that being said, listen up, everybody out there on live stream, because and if you think I'm picking on you, I am, but not you, meaning someone I may have already spoken to. It's all of you doing the same thing. If you are not married, you like the strength of the voice there? Because I'm trying to reach through and... If you are not married, you cannot live in the same house. Oh, but we live in separate rooms. I don't care. Oh, one lives upstairs, no. You cannot live in the same apartment, in the same house. No. That does not look like two people that are not married. Oh, but we're not doing anything. Nobody believes you. It may be true, but nobody believes you. And in case you think they do, they don't. Nobody believes you. Okay? Because they all know that if they lived in the same house with their potential spouse and they weren't married, they wouldn't behave either. They would up to a point probably and try to make a good show of it, but it's not going to happen for most people, okay? Maybe you're the exception and you guys can behave. You need to fix that. You're in Torah now? Find separate apartments until you're married. You don't want to do that for very long? Then get married. You don't want to start your life off already showing Yahweh that you want to have your cake and eat it and you don't want to do what he wants. You are not to come together and cohabitate and everything without being married. That is only something uniquely done by married people. Period. I've had to tell some people who come into this that were already sort of living with their girlfriends or their boyfriends, whatever it was, you need to fix that. Now, some of them couldn't figure out how to fix it that quick, so we just went ahead and got them married. I mean, if you're going to get married, then get married. We're not going to do friends with benefits. Okay? We have to also know that scripturally there's a problem with the appearance of evil. Okay? Doing something that you should not do. And so you cannot be living in the same house and have people believe you're not doing anything. Okay. If, as a married man, okay, let's say my wife's in Florida and a single woman comes into town. I've got an extra bedroom in the house. I'll just let her stay in that bedroom. Would that work? Would that work? Would anybody believe nothing's happening? But nothing's happening. Because it's the appearance. The only time we don't think any of those thoughts is when the two people are married. Then we think they're not doing anything because they're married. No. Did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. I didn't. Then we know nothing's going on. So. Billy's laughing. He's like, that's my rabbi. What can I do? Anyway, we'll go to another question. I think I've said enough right there. All right. If you're going to do this, counsel, and then it's okay if you've messed it up to this point. You know, you're supposed, what Abba wants you to do, he wants to see what you do once you learn something. When you learn something's wrong, do you keep doing it? When you learn something's right that you're not doing, do you go ahead and seek to do it? And so, yes, you could come into this. I've had people come into this, their girlfriend or boyfriend who they're engaged to is mainstream Christian, has no interest in any of this, yet they're coming into this now. And my answer to them is, you need to stop. And they look at me like, oh, but I love him or I love her. And you're going to have a nightmare in your marriage. I counsel mixed marriages all the time. By mixed, I don't mean race. I mean belief systems, unequally yoked. It's hard, sometimes brutally hard. You do not want to do that. Are you making us break up? I'm not making you do anything. I'm just telling you this is a bad idea and will very likely not go well. How likely? 99%? Okay? It's a bad idea. Well, but it's not his fault or her fault that I came into that. No, it's not. But would you rather have it happen once you're married? As much be happy it happened now. If it happens later, you know, bad news. I knew one young lady, and I praise Yah for the way this worked out. She was with a guy. He wasn't into it. She got into the Torah and everything else. She ended it like you know, right then and there. And then you know what? Within a year or two, Abba provided her with a new man. In the body. Okay? I'm not trying to break up couples. You made your choices for reasons that are not the reasons you have now. Your criteria is different now. Better to figure that out before you get in the covenanted thing called marriage, and now you have to get out of it. Let me tell you something. Here's a sad testimony. You might laugh, you might agree. I don't know what you're going to say. I think, sadly, a very large percentage of people are married for one reason. They're married. Think about that. See, breaking up with a girlfriend or boyfriend's not as tough. You're married, now you got to go through a divorce and all this other stuff. And everything. I think a lot of people are married because they're married. They don't want to be, but they feel stuck because, after all, they're married. And to end a marriage is different than just breaking up with somebody. And that's sad because you should be married because you want to be married. Because marriage doesn't really work unless you really want to be. You got to want to be married. Okay? If you're not married, I'd like to ask the question, if you're living with your significant other or whatever, why aren't you married? What are you waiting for? Well, we're living together. Well, you could do that married. What can't you do married that you're already doing and not do more legitimately and easier? Plus with all the other benefits. Oh, I already told you that ends at that point anyway, so. I'm kidding. All right. See, I don't understand what you're doing. Get married. Look, some people may think it was way too quick. My wife and I got married 3 days short of 4 months from when I met her. We met April 30th. We got married September 28th. 27th, I mean. Okay? Didn't take us long to figure out we wanted each other, didn't want each other. And we spent a lot of time getting to know each other. We didn't live together. We didn't do any of that other stuff. As a matter of fact, we did most of our dating with other people around, mostly people under the age of 12. She had a lot of nieces and nephews. And so we just took them everywhere and had a great time with the kids. But she got to see me with the kids and everything else. But we didn't take forever to figure that out. And once we figured it out, we got married. Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen. We got a lot of teenagers within the body that are all wanting to get connected to somebody at age 15, 16, and think they're going to be able to behave all the way to 18, 19 and get married. That's going to be tough. But it's happening all over the place. I got a lot of people contacting me from every country with kids, and there's 15, 16, so even, you know, 17, but even especially the 15, that they think somehow they're going to be able to behave until 18. And even be ready to get married at that point. I hope you're listening, teenagers. That's a long time to behave. And let me tell you something. You don't want to screw this up. It will hurt your marriage. If you mess up before you get there, it will hurt your marriage. Because you'll always know that you messed up. It will always taint the relationship. Don't mess this up. If you're a teenager, if you're adults, I don't care. You should be counseling with me to help you have the guidelines not to mess this up. Okay? Because I just want you to have that great marriage where you didn't mess it up beforehand and you get there like you're supposed to.
We've got a couple of people are asking about on the Shabbat. Karen McCarthy, what are your thoughts on nurses and doctors working on Shabbat? And Sandra L. has same thing. Are those jobs like doctors, nurse, firefighters, cops allowed to work on Sabbath?
Okay, good question. Actually, let me first, I have one last thought for the marriage people. This came up in one of the, I think it was earlier in the Zone meeting, comes up a lot in the Zone meetings. To all you married couples, it's not only allowable, it's, I think, a mitzvah, so to speak, for you to have relations with your spouse on Shabbat. Okay? Because people always ask that question. Usually they don't want to ask me necessarily, but the spouses are debating it. One wants it, the other one doesn't. But it's Shabbat. If the ultimate thing is us loving him and loving each other and this idea of being one, in the love making, you are one. I didn't say have sex. I said make love. That intimacy of being love, a husband and wife coming together as one. On Shabbat, beautiful thing. All the Jews think of this as, they almost like think of it almost like a mandate. That's what they think. It's a blessing. It's a mitzvah to do these things. Okay? And so I want to encourage you. Now, keep the trampolines and the trapeze out of it. Okay? I want you to make love. I don't want you doing crazy things. All right? You can save that for when sundown comes. All right? You know, the whips, the leather, whatever. I don't care. Just none of that stuff. None of that stuff is for Shabbat. I know you're thinking, just when you thought I hit the bottom, I took out a shovel and started digging. All right. Couldn't go any lower. No, but I just for the married couples, I want to encourage you. It's not like you have to do it, but I think it's a great thing if you feel comfortable to do that, to come together and be in love and show love and express love to each other on Shabbat. Okay? All right. Now, the question about the jobs. The careers. I actually remembered what the question was this time. This is why we really need this sort of messianic, halachic Talmud, if you want to call it that. I know people hate that word, but just some sort of a book of rulings about things that are today that we really don't see in Scripture specifically. Like, you know, they had watchers on the wall, but you don't see anything about what the police, so to speak, did, those who were military keeping peace. You don't see what anybody medically was doing. They don't describe any of that in the book. So what do you do with those things? So our best understanding as a leadership body when we come together and talk about these things was to define something as what we would call emergency or necessary services. Now, bear in mind, necessary services is not an arbitrary thing that you could decide you think what you do is necessary. It has to do with life and death. Only. Well, you know, if I don't work at the gas station and then the ambulance can't come to the gas station, no, I'm not talking about that. Okay? If you are an EMT, I have had both my children, when they were very young, end up in a hospital on a Sabbath. Stepped on a wrong toy, hit their head onto something, and, you know, I was glad that there was somebody to come, and I was glad when they didn't come that I was able to bring them to a hospital and do it myself, whatever it was, that there were people working. All right? So medical, protective services like the police, yes, you can work on Shabbat. Now, here's the way I generally encourage handling it. Number one, you should not, this is again, I'm only sharing my opinions. This is not scripture. I don't think you should take those jobs unless you're doing it because it's where your heart's at. Because if it's where your heart's at, you're not doing it for the money. You're doing it because you want to protect people and keep them safe and take care of them. Okay? If that's the case, there's a reason I said that first. If that's the case, then you should not be having a problem not getting compensated for working on Shabbat. Because if that's only the one of your days and you work one or two shifts a month, whatever it is, then you should be willing to say, I'm doing this because I'm doing it not for work and lucrative gain, but I'm doing it to be a protector, a watchman on the wall. And then I've had people who did that in the past, and what they would do is simply take that day's pay and they would put that in the box. Okay? That way they're not benefiting from working on Shabbat, but their people are benefiting from them working on Shabbat. Does that make sense? Does that work? I'm not mandating that. That's not a rule. It's an idea to think about. Okay? Because I personally would feel somewhat, and I know the people who contact me have had a real quandary making money working on Shabbat, even though they're doing necessary services. And they all felt, that the council anyway, felt so much better not putting that money in their pocket. Okay? I know that could really wreck your budget in some ways. That's your choice how you do that. I'm just giving you a solution potentially, okay? Because some of you may really have a hard time feeling like, but I'm getting paid to work on Shabbat. You can't tell your employer not to pay you. They can't do that legally. So all you can do is not put that money in your pocket by putting it in the box. Then you're making an offering with it, and you are not benefiting from it. All right? Just a thought. Keep that in mind. Because there are necessary services. Some of you do home care. If you're not there, that person could die. All right? So we're talking about any service that if you're not there, potentially somebody could be seriously injured or die, then you, that's a necessary service. Those things tend to be medical and protective, like police, all right? EMTs, doctors. Look, if you're a paper pusher in a hospital, that's not the same thing. They can always find someone else to paper push. We're talking about the people that actually deal with the patients. You should be able to find a way around paper pushing on the Sabbath. Those people are necessary to run hospitals, the administrative stuff. I'm not talking about you. Just because you work in a hospital doesn't make your job necessary. If the papers don't get pushed, people still get treated. Money doesn't flow into the hospital maybe the way they want it to, but people get treated. But if you are a primary care, in other words, you're on the floor caring for patients, you interact with people, and if you're not there, somebody could really be in trouble, that's a necessary service, especially if you work the ER.
This one, there was quite a few people asking about, talking about fellowship with family and friends, and so would be playing games with our children or family be taboos on Shabbat or on Friday night? Somebody is, how do we observe Shabbat on Friday night with playing games with your kids? Is there anything that's appropriate or not appropriate on Erev Shabbat?
All right. This is going to be a little easier if you have more than one child. All right. Children. And I'm going to say that makes them, I don't know. I would even say up to 20, but especially the little ones, okay? Little ones, which I would, in our classes here, would be the Katan age children. They're under 12, all right? Or up to 12, eight, you know, from 5 to 12 or younger than that even. Children, just, you let them enjoy themselves, okay? That's fine. They don't understand Shabbat. They don't understand Yahweh. They're not studying the Torah. But find them things that you think are appropriate where they can play, like Bible games can be worked, especially when they're old enough to understand some of the simple Bible games. But give them something that they do only on Shabbat, so they look forward to Shabbat to do that thing. Because you want them to enjoy Shabbat and look forward to Shabbat. As they get older, incorporate things like the Parsha Pearls program. Lots of wonderful activities for them. They can have a great time. Give them the coloring pages, the mazes, the crossword puzzles, whatever they're old enough to be able to do. The word searches, okay? And the lessons, etc. Now, as far as you, okay, don't you then spend your time playing with them if you can avoid that. Give them things they can do themselves while you maintain your focus vertically Friday night or Saturday, depending on how much time you have on Saturday when you're not. The reason we do this for so long is because it covers most of your day. So you don't have to worry about what you do on Saturday. You're doing this for 4 or 5 hours. But, you know, the kids need to be able to do stuff. I don't have a problem with the kids, you know, having something that keeps them quiet and busy, whatever you think is appropriate for them, you know, that's not going to interfere with you. It's when they get older that they will choose to understand how to keep Shabbat. They need to understand, give them some way to understand that the day is different. That's why you have certain things they only do on Shabbat. My children understood, because we have lots of Bible movies in my house, and of course Bible movies are very interesting because there are always lots of things wrong with them. But my children knew that when the sun went down, they turned off certain things and there were other things that they could do. And they knew. They saw it was sundown, or if all I had to do was yell up, hey, it's sundown, they would just switch what they were doing if they were wanted to do something and do something else. All right? And so they understand that. Now my children, when they're older, I've got one that's got a bubble pop, the other one doesn't. And my daughter, you know, my daughter will watch some of my sermons sometimes Friday night. She likes the teaching. She'll sit with me and actually we'll do our own little teaching study together. She's now at that age, at 16, now turning 17 this week. But she wasn't doing necessarily those things when she was, you know, 5 or 6 years old or 8 or 9 years old. So the children can play. Okay, you get to control how they play, but let them play. They're not expected to, you know, keep all of these things from that perspective. And all they're going to do is you're going to make them miserable and they're going to hate Shabbat. Just the truth, right? So, you know, we happen to own like 400 Bible movies. So the kids pick, it's funny, they only watch the same 3 or 4 anyway. I think we've seen Fiddler on the Roof like 10,000 times. But, and certain Esther movies and certain other ones that we've seen over and over. But they like to, at least my daughter likes to watch those things. I mean, my son at this point is just doing whatever he's doing. You know, he's 18 now. He's got to wait for his own bubble to be popped. And as a parent, that's not easy, but you just got to be patient. You know, when he comes here, he's respectful and behaves appropriately. And when he's at home, he doesn't do anything on Friday nights to disturb anybody. He just goes in his room like any good 18-year-old teenager, and we never hear from him. I think he still lives in my house. It kind of pops his head out every now and then. All right? And that's, so that, I know it's rough to know those things. For you as an adult, figure out a way that they can be entertained and keep themselves occupied that doesn't distract you from doing what you need to do on a Friday night. All right? Anyway, that's the last question then, Rob?
Yes, sir, that is. A lot of people said that, you know, there's no better way to spend Shabbat than have 2 Q&As with you.
There you go. Well, maybe one of these days we'll do the little 24-hour marathon or something. We'll just do nothing but Q&As. All right? We'll see how many of you can hang the whole time. I can. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's like the people that came up to me one feast and they're like, well, we know it's like 11:30, but do you think you have time to talk to us? We know it's late. I said, I'm fine. I said, are you going to be okay? Oh, no, we'll put you under. And I said, okay, whatever. By about 1:30, eyes are glazed over, and I'm like, okay, we're done. They're like, done? I said, you're like glass-eyed and everything. You're done. So they finally went to bed, and I worked for another hour because I was fine. I mean, I go to bed that time every day, so you got to understand that, you know, those kind of things are different. So I can do the marathon. Look, I got only 3-4 hours sleep last night because my daughter woke up not doing well and I had to take care of her. And so I didn't get a whole lot of sleep, you know. So, but you can see that doesn't seem to have affected me a whole lot. Anyway, all right, do we have the children?